So we've got a relatively small group here, so please do ask questions during the talk. Interrupt. I don't mind at all if the talk gets sidetracked into other topics. Please keep them on something related to Samba. But please do heckle and ask questions during the talk. So this talk is really about what has been happening over the last year, particularly in the Samba 4 world, the new developments that are happening with Samba there, and also what is still there is still to do. There is a lot of work still to go. Samba 4 has reached the stage. It reached the stage a few months ago where I announced what's called the Susan stage. And Susan is my long-suffering wife. And every version of Samba has at one stage reached the Susan stage where I was confident enough of the code that it could be used by my wife for storing her thesis and her book and that sort of information, knowing that I didn't have too high a chance of ending up sleeping on the couch for several months when I lost her book. So it has reached that stage, which means we have at least one production user, and I know some other people are experimenting with it, but Samba 4 is still at the stage now where the people who are using it for real use could be counted on one, maybe two hands. So it's very early days, but it is at least somewhat real, whereas the discussions I had last year here, it was mostly a dream with some faked demonstrations. The demonstrations this year are less fake. So before I get started on the main talk as to what's happened, I thought I'd start off with a demonstration. And so what I'm going to do here is I've got Samba 4 running here on my laptop. And so if I go here, you can see there's a Samba 4 server printing out a few debug messages. And in fact, it's quite a busy Samba 4 server. Now, this is just an ordinary IBM ThinkPad, but what I'm going to show you here is there's some music playing in the background, and there's a reason for the music, which I'll get to in a second. What we've got here is a Samba 4 server running all of our benchmarks simultaneously. It's running our... because Samba 4 has to provide many, many services. Samba 4, the Samba project is a different sort of project to, say, the Apache project or the Squid project or OpenLDAP project, where they focus on one protocol. The way Microsoft does things is they tightly integrate many protocols. So Samba needs to implement a datagram protocol, a NBT implementation, a WINS implementation, an SMB and SIFS implementation, DCRPC, DCRPC over TCP, an LDAP server, a web server. All of these have to be implemented simultaneously by the one seamless system that administrators just see as Samba, which works. So in Samba, we have to go and implement the protocols as they are by the used by the Microsoft clients. So we have to go to them, if you like, whereas other projects more require the client come to the server. So I'll run through the little things that this is running, and I'll leave all of these benchmarks running while I'm doing my talk. So it sort of demonstrates that the code really does work, and on the top here we've got a benchmark running a WINS benchmark. So it's testing how many queries per second, both writes and reads, it can do as a WINS server. Now, it's only doing 300-odd queries per second. It can actually do around 10,000 operations per second on this WINS server, but not while simultaneously running NetBench runs and other things that it's doing in the other windows. So the next window I've got here, it's running our LDAP server. So we're continuously doing queries on our LDAP server, querying the root DSC, querying LDAP records. That's our own LDAP server. We have our own LDAP implementation written from scratch in Samba version 4. Then in the next window here, I have 300 connected users who are just doing disk-free operations, very simple operations, each of them in turn doing an operation. But it's simulating an environment with 300 idle users, your typical office workers. Then we have here a RPC benchmark. So we are running at 112 queries per second at the moment. And again, that can do many, many times that if this was all it was doing. So it's doing these 100 or so queries per second, doing quite complex RPC operations, server-service RPC operations. And in this particular case, it's running over TCP/IP. So because the RPC protocol can run over many transports, and in SAM before, we have to implement all of those transports because we can't control which transports the client chooses to use. So we implement all of them, which means we have a lot of infrastructure to build up. And this was getting it to the stage where we could implement this, what's called NCACN IP TCP transport that you see there, took quite a few months of effort. So in the next window here, we have it running an NBT server. So it's doing the typical adding names into the NBT server, querying names, name query, the NMB lookup type commands, and it's running them at about 280-odd queries per second at the moment. And occasionally it's getting a failure. Occasionally this laptop is under quite heavy stress and it drops a packet. The IP stack at the lowest level, UDP, is supposed to drop packets under extreme load, and it's been running now for an hour or so at a rate of, 280 queries per second, and it's dropped a total of 580 packets. That's the operating system dropping them. That's not Samba dropping them. So in the next window here, we're running a NetBench run. So NetBench, of course, is the well-known benchmark from Ziff Davis. This is NBench. This is our simulator of a NetBench run. And it's only a two-user NetBench run. But for a laptop, we're getting a respectable 6 megabytes a second. Of course, it can do a lot better than that, but not while it's simultaneously running all the other benchmarks. And here we're doing a datagram test. And this datagram test is the type of thing that is done when a workstation has to find the domain controller. So as part of this test, we are creating a fake domain member, joining that to the domain, doing datagram queries to check that it is in the domain correctly and responds to the getDC queries, and then it's leaving the domain again. So at a rate of it's constantly joining and leaving the domain, exercising the domain code, exercising our datagram code, exercising our IDL code, etc. Then down here, we're running our SAMR test. So in a loop here, we are running every possible operation on the SAMR database and checking that every field coming back from the SAMR server is consistent with every other field against a SAMBA4 domain controller. The SAMBA4 server is configured as an Active Directory domain controller in this case. In this window here, I'm running LDB searches. So I showed an earlier window where we were doing LDAP queries via our LDAP server. But of course, we have a lower level interface to that, directly to our low level database called LDB. That's the equivalent of the JET database from Windows. It's the low level database that provides the engine behind all of the other services. And here I'm doing queries against the number of users. And if you watch carefully, you'll see the number of users actually goes up and down a little bit. Occasionally it's 5, occasionally it's 6, mostly it's 6. And that's because the other tests, of course, are joining and leaving domains. They're creating users, deleting users, and those users appear in this test, so occasionally it goes up or down. So finally here, I'll show you top running. All of this is running, those hundreds of connected users, all of these services, and SMBD is running, in this case, as a single process. And that single process is consuming a total of about 19 megabytes of virtual memory. And while it's doing that, I'm not skipping. The music is playing cleanly, the laptop is still responsive, the machine is still a usable system despite the fact that it is running all of these benchmarks simultaneously. And achieving that required us to re-architect Samba in a very, very fundamental way. So what we have now is a solution where you can create an Active Directory domain controller that could support 1,000 users on something that fits in the palm of your hand. So I'll leave that running. I won't play the music during my whole talk, but I'll talk a bit more about as I go along. Perhaps maybe one more demo while I'm here. One of the things that people have been asking us for a long time, and there's Sam before answering some more queries, is to be an Active Directory domain controller. And that was one of the driving forces behind the Sam before effort. The other one was the NTVFS layer, which I talked about in previous conferences, which is the ability to store NT file system attributes in a POSIX file system. We've achieved that. We're able to store NT streams. We're able to store the extended times, NT ACLs and obey them, all on top of a POSIX file system. So I'll be talking about that a bit more later in my talk. But one of the main driving forces people have been asking us for years is, could we be an Active Directory domain controller? So I thought I'd give you the do the most dangerous thing for a talk and give you a live demo. So here we have a Windows XP professional up-to-date workstation. And we have ourselves in this window a SAMBA 4 Active Directory domain controller. And currently this Windows XP workstation is sitting in a work group. And I'm going to change that and join it to a domain. And the domain in this case is BlueDom. And I will just, while I'm over here, start up a network sniffer so you can see all of the traffic, all everything that had to be implemented in order for this to work. So if I do this, that first thing just there, where I clicked OK and I said I wish to join to this domain, that's actually surprisingly tricky. That required implementing certain net logon queries because it wants to try and find a domain controller. Now, if I type in an administrator username and password and click OK, then have a look over here what's happening in the sniffer window. Getting name queries for BlueDom 1C. Oh, it's not answering those. It should be. It'll take a few seconds. So it'll recover and continue, I'm quite sure. Give it a few seconds. So what it's going to be doing here is a few hundred packets, and each of these packets is going to do a bunch of different network protocols. There it goes, finally. Okay. Sorry, I was sniffing on the wrong interface. That's why. I've been recently changed. That's the problem with demonstrations. Notice down the bottom right-hand corner of this VMware session, there is two icons for network cards because I've been recently playing with the Win server with multiple interfaces and correctly registering names on two interfaces. And I'd forgotten that I'd changed that. And, of course, the Windows XP box happened to choose the interface that I wasn't sniffing. It was choosing the other interface. So, in fact, all the activity there was going on the other one. Anyway, you can see that it worked. And if I did have the sniff there, what it would have done is it would have done queries, datagram queries, and NBT queries, and then it starts doing, it creates SIF sessions, it does DCRPC over SIFs, then it launches DCRPC over TCP sessions, it does multiple binds on those, it does all the authentication protocols, the NTLMSSP, etc. And then once it's created the machine account in the domain, just for completeness, just because they could, it then goes and modifies the machine account that it's just created, but not via the RPC where it created it, by directly talking to us as an LDAP server, and then doing LDAP operations against our server and modifying the accounts that it's just created, and then doing DRSU API queries to do basically a remote string talk where it's taking a machine name and asking the server to parse it for it, rather gratuitously. And so it does all these hundreds of operations, and eventually it says, welcome to the domain. And, of course, it then would ask us to reboot, and then we can log in, etc. So I can demonstrate that, if you like, if you want to see the actual login and everything. If you want to see that, or... Yeah? OK. We'll go the whole hog. We'll reboot the box. And remember, while it's doing all this, this same little very patient SAMBA 4 server is simultaneously running all those benchmarks in the background. Sorry? Question? Oh, it's a 2 gigahertz P4. It's actually got lots of memory. It's got 2 gigabytes of RAM, would you believe? But that's not for this demo. I'm only using 18 megabytes for this server. The reason I have so much memory in my laptop is that I use VMware and I test Longhorn. And... So, I test Longhorn on VMware, and that requires that I give it about half a gigabyte per session, and I often simultaneously run Windows 2003 and Windows 2000 servers, so we need a lot of memory for that. But in fact, this laptop is barely ticking over, really, in terms of memory usage. So I'm now going to log in as the administrator on this domain, of the BlueDom domain, like this. And there you go, password expires today because this is the first login and so, of course, it's telling me my password is going to expire. But if I just put in a bad password, I'll just put in SAMBA as the password, what do you think will happen? What I'm hoping will happen is it'll tell me that gets rejected. because that's not a complex enough password. Because, of course, in SAMBA 4, we implement all of the password checks for strength of the password, etc. And so it will hopefully fail the operation and say that that is not a complex enough password. It is a little busy, this box. Password supplier does not meet the minimum complexity requirements. Please select another password that meets all of the following criteria, and it pulls back those criteria from the domain controller. So, in fact, we'd have to type a random password, and I'm afraid that thinking up random passwords is rather difficult. This is what computers are good at. So I will choose one here, that one there, A-I-L-5-A-E-F-E, A-I-L-5. Very hard to type with 100 people looking at you and typing it twice correctly. Your password has been changed. So that little dialog box, your password has been changed, represents probably 2 or 3 weeks' work by Andrew Bartlett. So congratulations, Andrew. Because, of course, with SAMBA 4, we had slippery slopes for a long time in SAMBA, where you implement just one little feature. You say, we tell the client, yes, we support LDAP, or yes, we support SPNAGO, or yes, we support this flavour of DCRPC. And then what happens is the client then says, oh, you support that. That must mean that you support these other 100 things as well. And so we've had password change in SAMBA for years, of course. But, of course, now that we're telling the client we're an Active Directory domain controller, the client... Sorry?
Can we tell the difference?
Yeah, on the wire, certainly.
Well, can you see from the SP GUI that they're not talking to...
You really need the sniffer to see it. Oh, okay. I mean, because... Yeah? Oh, right, okay, very likely. I don't know much about Windows, and I'm sure there's methods of seeing that. I haven't got my domain controller set up as a Kerberos KDC, so I can't actually do the K-list, which would be the normal method, to see what tickets I've got, but I haven't set it up as a KDC in this case. We've negotiated non-KDC. We can do that, but anyway. So that gives you the idea. There I am, logged into the domain. It'll probably ask me to take the tour of Windows XP next. Because the first login. Updates are ready. Well, okay, it wants me to update my computer. I don't think I'll update it now. And take a tour of Windows XP. There you go. It knows that it's the first login. And so there we have it. SAMBA 4 is an ADS domain controller doing a join, doing a login, and it works. Okay, so back to the talk. New servers. So there's been a lot of work over the last year. This time last year was basically the planning stage. There's been, across the whole SAMBA project, there's been a bit over 6,500 commits, change sets, where each change set might touch one file, 3 files, 100 files. So about 6,500. That's about 18 change sets to SAMBA every day for the last year. That's quite a high rate. That's, given the number of developers we've got, that's really quite a high rate. So what have we done? Well, we've created a bunch of new servers that we didn't have before. Some of these servers we did have in SAMBA 3, but due to the choices we've made in architecture to try to reach the type of server that I've demonstrated to you earlier, we had to re-implement many of these services, in fact, all of the servers. But some of them are new. For example, the LDAP server. We didn't have an LDAP server previously. We could talk to LDAP servers previously, but now we have to be the LDAP server. And that LDAP server then has to be integrated tightly with our SAM server and with all of the other components, the RPC servers, etc. And it's built on top of a new database called the LDB database, which is an LDAP-like database. You can think of it as schemaless LDAP, LDAP without a schema. And you could say that that's like saying water without being wet. But it really is a very lightweight, it's bringing the light into LDAP. very, very lightweight database. And it's appropriate for our needs. Whereas an LDAP database, the existing LDAP database were very focused on standards. And of course, we're dealing with Microsoft clients here, so standards don't matter as much. Following the precise standards for LDAP was less important for us than being compatible with what Microsoft clients do, which allowed us to cut corners, for example, missing a schema. Then, of course, we find situations where we do need the schema, and that's where the work by Simo, where are you? Hand up, Simo. Great. He's added the ability to support schemas in our LDAP server. So you might think, well, what was the point of that? Why didn't you just use a server with a schema in the first place? The point is that when we reach rates of 10,000 queries per second and writes per second in our WINS server, that bypasses the schema checking. And in a normal LDAP server, you can't bypass that. So it gives us the JET database equivalent, where we can have a reasonably decent database with direct access, and then for situations where we do need the schema, we can then use one. So, observation? Right, you may not know what a JET database. The underlying database at the core of many services in the Microsoft world is called a JET database. And so this fits in at sort of the equivalent level in the architecture of SAMBA 4. We have a new NBT server. It's a fast event-driven NetBIOS server, very, very lightweight, and happily handles around, say, 20,000 operations per second. And it's based on IDL, so it's auto-generated. The packet marshalling and unmarshalling in the NBT server is auto-generated code. The datagram server, which is a modular architecture, also it's IDL-based that does the net log on with plugins for all the different datagram types that we need. And a WINS server, a very scalable one, and WINS replication support. We have the client side and part of the server side of WINS replication. And we expect to be supporting WINS replication as just a standard part of SAMBA version 4 when it's released. We also have a lot of new RPC servers. So SAMBA RPC is, of course, very, very central. The DCRPC protocols are central to the way that Microsoft clients deal with the world. And we had to implement all of these. But first of all, we had to build up the DCRPC infrastructure. And we had an existing infrastructure from SAMBA 3, but it didn't suit our needs because the infrastructure we needed had to do so much more in terms of supporting other transports, supporting other security models, supporting signing and sealing, etc. And so we ended up building a new DCRPC layer, and it's one that is mostly auto-generated. So we have IDL that describes all the RPC interfaces we need to build, and then our IDL compiler, as part of this project, we wrote a new compiler, the IDL compiler, which takes those IDL files and generates all the C code. So now we're at the point in SAMBA 4, we're a little bit over 50%, about 52% of all the code in SAMBA 4 is auto-generated using our IDL compiler. So we have a SAMR server, which of course is the SAM database that you're familiar with from the Windows world, which holds users and groups and machines, that sort of thing. The LSA server, the local security authority, the NetLogon server for network logins, you can probably guess what NetLogon does, and for replication, etc. A registry server, the DCOM server, that's quite recent work by Yelma. Where's Yelma? Yeah, up the back there. So Yelma has been taking the infrastructure we've built for DCRPC, and that infrastructure wasn't designed for DCOM. It was designed to solve the problem for SAMBA, but we deliberately made the infrastructure such that it could be used by other projects. In this case, the project was one that was inside the SAMBA team, which is to support DCOM. And so we now have the beginnings of a DCOM library on Linux. And we can write IDL files and compile them and create DCOM interfaces and talk to them from Microsoft DCOM. And that's really quite an advance. And it's one of the things that I think will happen more and more with the SAMBA 4 codebase. Last night was a good example where we worked with the group, Julian's group from France, who've been working on OpenChange, which is an open implementation of the exchange protocols. Unlike the previous attempts, this one is using the native protocols. So it's trying to build an exchange server that talks exactly the same protocols as the Microsoft Exchange server, just like SAMBA talks the SIFS protocol. And so they've been able to build upon some of the work we've done on DCRPC, leverage that into a new project so they don't need to start from scratch, and start building up, have a credible chance of building an Exchange server. And if you are interested in Exchange services, then I'd really encourage you to talk to them. We've got three people here from that project, and please grab them during the conference and talk to them about their project. We have a server and a workstation server. There's dozens of these little servers, and there's a whole lots more. The one very important one that is partially written now is the DRSU API server. And that's been worked on particularly by Stefan Metzemacher. Metz? Yes. There you are, Metz. So Metz, that is so critical because that is what provides the replication between Active Directory domain controllers. It's the multi-master aspect of the LDAP implementation from Microsoft. And that is absolutely central to the way that Microsoft networks are managed and you have multiple domain controllers and failover, etc. And so Metz has made enormous progress on that, building on top of the infrastructure we've built for DCRPC to create something that can now talk a fairly, you know, sizable portion of the DRS UAPI protocols. We also have a lot of new client libraries. So we have a new NBT client library. One of the things that we've been doing in this effort has been to create protocol client libraries that are as complete as possible, that implement all aspects of the protocol. And the reason for that is twofold. First of all, the client libraries of themselves are useful. You can write useful tools that can talk these protocols as a client, not just as a server. But secondly, it allows us to build test suites, standalone test suites, which try all aspects of the protocol against our own server, so we can do really good regression testing within our own code base without relying on tools running on Microsoft systems. That allows for much more automated testing and experimenting, writing benchmarks, and experimenting with sending incorrect requests, making sure we respond correctly to incorrect requests, that we give the correct error codes. So the various client libraries we've been working on lately, the NBT client library, which is an event-driven NetBIOS client library, our libcli datagram, which provides mail slot services and related services, our LDAP client library, which of course allows us to talk to other LDAP servers and can also act as a back-end. It could act as a back-end for our LDB library, though currently we're using OpenLDAP as the back-end for the client side of the back-end of our LDB server, LDB database. The Resolve library, which is a generic asynchronous name resolution library that gateways onto all the different name resolution mechanisms that you need in the Microsoft world in an asynchronous fashion. Our WINS library, which is, of course, talks the WINS protocol and implements replication and all of the extra features you need in a good quality WINS server. And then we have another library that allows us to combine them. We have this concept called composite functions that allows us to piece together asynchronous building blocks into higher level functions. And so that's been taken advantage of, particularly by Mimir. Mimir didn't make it, I believe, this conference. Mimir from Poland. And he's created the LibNet library, which is an asynchronous library that provides high-level functions for manipulating the protocols. And what it does is it builds on top of the building blocks of all the other libraries to create these high-level functions. It's going to be the core of our administration system. And we don't yet have a decent administration system for SAMBA 4, but when we do, it's going to be largely based upon the LibNet functionality that Mimir and others are building. A lot of new infrastructure code. To support all of this, we needed to reinvent a lot of the core infrastructure for SAMBA. And some of these things, for example, the new TALIC, has been a massive advance in essentially programmer sanity. It has allowed programmers to get on with the job without worrying about the fine details of memory management, giving us features that would normally only be associated with memory-managed languages, like Python and Perl and C-sharp or Java, but in C, and providing very, very fast memory management services in a way that greatly simplifies programming tasks. Our events library, which is our generic events system, which is what allows us to design the whole system as an enormous state machine. So when you saw that single SMBD running there, it wasn't using threads or anything inside there. It was just a simple single task. But it has an enormous state machine inside there, and that state machine is juggling all of those protocols simultaneously and all of the operations within those protocols in a non-blocking fashion, simultaneously running it inside one task. And of course, we can run it in multiple tasks, like in SAMBA 3. If you have a 16 CPU system, then SAMBA will quite happily chew all that CPU in serving up as many clients as you like. But we can scale, in SAMBA 3 we could scale up, but we couldn't scale down quite as far. And so being able to scale down to this sort of thing and having these benchmarks running, sitting on my laptop while I'm giving a talk, is something that we really wanted to be able to do. So the events library is at the core of that. composite functions I've mentioned, which is building blocks for state machines, allowing us to build up all of these pieces into a coherent whole. GenSec is really the brainchild of Andrew Bartlett again, where he has unified our authentication and security infrastructure, and in a way that has just really revolutionised the way we deal with authentication services inside Samba. So he's put behind a single, simple interface all of the complexity of the various cryptographic systems that Microsoft uses. It's really analogous to the SSPI subsystem that Microsoft has, but built for Samba. And in fact, there's been talk of doing interfaces to provide an SSPI-like interface on top of GenSec. So a bit of Andrew will be talking about that more during his talk. Plus lots more. We have internal messaging systems, a greatly improved build system, module support, entry credentials and ACLs, privileges support, etc., etc. We also have a bunch of new functionality within existing subsystems. So I talked last year about the NTVFS backend, which is an abstraction that allows us to provide NT file system services inside Samba, a layer that looks like an NTFS interface. And that now has a good quality POSIX backend. Last year, we had a fake backend, and I think I gave a demonstration of file streams and attributes running. That demonstration was whipped up the night before my talk last year, and it was really clunky underneath. Well, now we have a proper one. We have a decent POSIX backend which can store attributes, and so I might as well show you that, give you a little demonstration. So we go here, and here's our XP box, and if I go and explore, and I will go and map a network drive, /test, and so that's brought up that thing, and so I can then, there's a hosts file, and I can bring up its properties, and there's summary information, and I can put in a title, so and then I can go and say commit that, or go to the simple interface and put a comment. Samba XP is really fun. And apply that. And that's then saved into an extended attribute on the server. And so if I then go and bring up those properties again, then I would expect that that information is still there. So it is, plus we have ACLs. So if I click over here, it's going to take a while. That's because remember I mentioned the slippery slope? Well, we don't yet have a CLDAP server. And the lack of a CLDAP server means that occasionally Windows XP desperately tries to talk to us with CLDAP and fails to do so. And so it then pauses and eventually tries a different mechanism. Now, that's unacceptable. We can't have users going and waiting 5 seconds to bring up the security tab. So, of course, we expect in the next few weeks we'll have a CLDAP server and we expect that will start working. But you can see here that we're editing an NT ACL, and we can go and change this ACL and apply it, and we can go and change ownership of files, etc., etc. And we're storing real NT ACLs associated with the files in the file system, which is something that we haven't been able to do. We've got something in Samba 3 does provide NT ACLs, as many of you know, but it provides them in a way with mappings onto POSIX ACLs, which sometimes people notice isn't quite right. And so one of the efforts we've been putting in is to create the infrastructure so that we can store them exactly right. And so we won't have to make excuses about the ACL mapping problem anymore. So back onto the talk. There's, of course, the RPC server supports many new security modes and features like multiple binds. We have NCACL RPC and Unix stream transports for our libRPC servers. Our NTVFS system is now stackable and asynchronous thanks to the work of Stefan Metzenmacher, which means that a file system backend can defer answering a request for as long as it wants to. So, for example, when a locking request comes in where we say something like, please give me this lock, and I'm willing to wait for up to 7 seconds for it, then we had mechanisms for supporting that in Samba 3, but they didn't really integrate cleanly with the way we did our VFS. So we've now got a cleaner way of implementing that. And it also allows us to have the potential to support things like hierarchical storage systems. Somebody can write a back end which really can use asynchronous I/O mechanisms to when it's asked to do a particular file system operation, it can say, yes, I've started the operation, but it isn't completed yet. I'll let you know when it's completed. And the rest of Samba can continue on its merry way, and then the back end can then tell that layer, okay, that operation is finished now, you can answer that request to the client. But meanwhile, another 100 or 1,000 requests have gone through, which is really, it just gives us a good basis for building up new things. Nobody's really taking advantage of that yet. That's why I was so interested to talk to some of the file system people here in the audience, some of the commercial file system vendors, and also talking to some of the clustered file system, the free clustered file systems, because they have the potential to take advantage of this infrastructure that we've built to produce something which really does do take advantage of our asynchronous infrastructure, take advantage of the hooks we've got for supporting clustering, etc. And I'm really excited about the possibilities over the next year or so of some synergy between the Samba project and some of these other file system projects to provide the services that people have been asking us to provide for years, but we haven't been able to get a really good answer on up until now. And new credentials system for unifying things like command line credentials handling. They're little things that really all add up. So PIDL is another big part of this. I've mentioned that a bit over half of all of our code in Samba 4 is now auto-generated. And that reduces the task for the programmer enormously. Much, much simpler to write IDL files, describe a protocol, and then generate all the code for marshalling and unmarshalling that, generate the code for printing out structures, etc., debugging things, much easier than handwriting each routine. But we've taken that a lot further. We've taken the IDL concept far beyond what Microsoft has, and we're now using it in areas that they would never dream of using it. So we are using it for MBT packets, for datagram packets. When I mentioned before the storing NT-ACLs on disk and storing extended attributes and storing streams, storing all the extra timestamps, we're actually marshalling and unmarshalling that, storing that to disk using IDL. And that seems quite alien in the Unix world, but because it builds on the tools we already have, we have this tool, this flexible tool for taking data structures and marshalling them. We can apply that in all sorts of interesting places in the design of Samba 4, in the code, and it greatly simplifies the programming task, having these single interfaces to these types of operations. So the amount of IDL we've got in the code, the number of interfaces we've got, has approximately doubled in the last year. And we've also had some interesting work done, particularly by Tim Potter, in extending the generated code to support scripting languages, so we can script it from Python, so we'll have a scriptable control of domains and Active Directory from Python, and potentially other languages, plus auto-generating ethereal modules. Ethereal, of course, is the sniffer of choice in the free software world, and we use it extensively. And it's had the same problem of handwriting enormous amounts of code to unmarshal data off the wire and display it. And so Tim did some very, very good work in automatically generating network sniffer modules, ethereal modules, directly from our IDL code. So we write an IDL interface and we can say, please give us an ethereal module that describes the interface. And there we have an immediate network analyzer for that protocol. So that's been enormously valuable, that work, and I hope that work will continue and hopefully will be integrated into into ethereal in the future. LDB has taken over from TDB in the last year. We demonstrated LDB last year, but it was hardly used. LDB is the mini LDAP database, and it's now really playing a central role. It now has an LDAP protocol server with a not just an LDAP-like API, but LDAP frames, ASM1 DER BER frames on the wire. We have a module system for cleanly extending it. We have a schema module using the module system written by Simo for LDAP-like schema checking. And we have integration with the rest of the infrastructure of Samba 4, for example, Talloc, which makes programming much, much simpler within the when dealing with LDB databases. There's also been interest from other projects in adopting some of these bits of technology. In the past, Samba, we haven't been very good about packaging the individual bits of technology that we've created for use by other projects, and we're trying to become better citizens that way. And so we're leading that with an effort to make LDB and TALIC. Yes, Jeremy.
By the way, Samba 3 adopted the Samba 4 TALIC.
Right. So Samba 3 has adopted the Samba 4 TALIC as of this morning. And but that, of course, isn't really cross-pollination between projects. So maybe. It's almost a separate project. Right. Thank you, Volker. So, but I gave a talk on LDB last week in Australia, and I got interest after the talk in Yum and dpackage, which are package management systems for Linux, adopting it, LDB. And hopefully, if you're a Debian user, the frustration of apt-get install, waiting for the database to churn, is quite frustrating because they don't have a decent lightweight database to use there. So I'm very much looking forward, as a user of Debian, to the point where they adopt LDB, which will enormously speed up the package management on Debian and hopefully in other projects. But still, of course, there are missing pieces. LDB doesn't yet have a journal transaction backend, local backend. It can get it via the LDAP connector, but we don't have it built in. And we do need that because we do understand that just telling people buy yourself an uninterruptible power supply, buy a UPS so you don't crash, that really isn't a good answer. You do need to be robust to crashes. Databases do need to be tolerant of system failures. And so one of the things we need to solve before Samba 4 is released is to support transactions and journaling in the back end to LDB. And we're investigating a number of ways of doing that. But if you are a database guru, particularly if you're the low-level database guru that deals with the bits and bytes, the indexing methodologies, et cetera, journaling and transactions, then please come and talk to me and other Samba team members afterwards, because we might be able to learn something from you about how to solve this particular problem or which choice to make. We're actually spoiled for choice in the ways of doing this, but we need to understand the trade-offs and make the right choice. We have a DSDB database, which is Metz's name for the new SAM database, and that's the Directory Services database, which provides our authentication infrastructure. It uses Active Directory attributes and structure. It's hooked into our LSA, SAMR, and NetLogon servers. And this is what allows Samba 4 to act as a primary domain controller. And so when we did that WinXP login, then XP sees us as an ADS domain controller. NT4 can also join and log in, of course. And all the user group properties are accessible via RPC, LDAP, and the LDB APIs with a single coherent set of data behind it. So, for example, this is what a domain looks like in Samba 4. I'm sorry that's small type. Those of you sitting at the front, you know, good on you. If you're at all familiar with Active Directory, then these attributes will seem quite familiar. That is basically a bit of LDIF coming out of an LDAP server. And so that's what it looks like in Samba 4, just like it looks like in an Active Directory domain controller. That is the representation of a domain, and which is quite different to how we represented domains in previous versions of Samba. So this is what a user looks like. There's the DN for the user Tridge, who is a person, who's an organizational person with user account control, all the GUIDs, the SIDs, the SAM account control, etc. All of the attributes you expect out of Active Directory are present on the users in Samba version 4. Admin tools. This is where we get into part of the talk where we say what doesn't exist yet. Yeah?
Short question about the slide before.
Yep. Aha, okay. Wanted to show you that. So the question was, of course, that we have classes, object classes, we don't have a schema. How does that make sense? So if I set my LDB URL, and what I'll do is I'll run the LDB editor on... let's see, actually. I'll actually just fire up the whole one. Okay. I'll just fire up an edit on the entire database, bring up the entire Active Directory database so I can show you how it works. Right. So what we've got is, if we look at something like, what was the class you were looking at? Object class, let's see... Object class user, and where's our object classes down here? Okay, actually, maybe I should just show the provisioning stuff. Setup provision.ldiff. Okay, this is how we provision a database. Now, what we have is we don't have a schema as such. An empty file, a non-existent file, is a valid LDB database. But we have on top of that the ability to do LDAP-like schema constraints at either a very simple level, which is what is represented here, or at a schema-type level. So inside our LDB database, we have LDAP records, which are special LDAP records that have these strange DNs. See this DN here, DN is at subclasses, yeah? Which is a special DN that the LDB database knows about that provides the class hierarchy. All right. So we see here, we say that top, that domain is a subclass of top. Person is a subclass of top. Group is a subclass of top. Domain DNS is a subclass of domain, etc. And organizational person user is a subclass of organizational person, which itself is a subclass of person, etc. So that is the traditional role of a schema. Now, I could take that out, and I could save that database, and it would update it, and it would still work. Because in that case, those object classes in that LDIF output would become basically meaningless, just be tags, arbitrary top-level tags. But by putting this record in, it means that if we do an LDAP search where we say, give us all records of type organizational person, then it looks in this record and it knows, aha, we've got to expand that to also include type person. Right? Oh, in fact, sorry, type user, because user is a subclass of organizational person. So it knows about the class hierarchy and is able to expand queries correctly with the class hierarchy by looking at this subclass's record. Right? In a similar fashion, we have this attributes record. So again, the second purpose of the schema in LDAP is to provide the properties of attributes. So whether an attribute is case-sensitive, case-insensitive, whether it accepts wildcards, etc. So we have an LDAP record in this special name called @attributes, which provides the properties of all the attributes that we don't want to be the default properties, when the default properties are a reasonable, you know, case-sensitive, non-wildcarded property. And these are the ones in our schema that we care about that provide exceptions to that. Finally, we have a special LDAP record called @indexList. The DN is @indexList, which provides which elements we are indexing on to build the automatic indexing. And then the indexes themselves are, in fact, LDAP records in the database. So the index is built into the database with the individual index entries appearing as records in the database. So that's a little bit different to the way things work in a traditional LDAP database. And this doesn't, of course, quite match the way that schemas are done in LDAP usually. So that's where SIMOs work to provide a schema module. The schema module, then, you have a separate tree within the LDAP database, which is the schema, just like it's normally presented as a separate partition. But the LDB module knows to query that and knows to honour that and constrain the operations on the LDAP database by that schema. So that's an alternative technique to using these special records. So these special records are very, very fast, a very efficient way of marginally constraining and changing the properties of the LDAP database. The schema is more designed at constraining clients from doing operations that aren't allowed. This is more designed for changing the properties of what is done rather than constraining. Does that make sense? Yep. It's a different way of dealing with it. And it's, in some ways, you can think of LDB as a halfway point between the key value pair databases like the old Berkeley database and a real LDAP database. It's sort of halfway between. It's got an LDAP-like API, but it's got a flavour more like the key value pair, lightweight, and empty file as a valid database type system. It's a halfway mark between the two, straddles the boundary. You can, but with an empty file, you can. Without a schema, you can. I can put in my database, I can just give Tridge an attribute foo, and it will just create it, unconstrained. It's because we trust the Samba code. The only application code that is using the LDB API directly not going via the schema module, is internal trusted code. So that code doesn't need to be double-checked. It's not going to suddenly sneak in an Easter egg that creates an attribute foo incorrectly, right? But for external clients that are coming in via the LDAP protocol, those are gatewayed via our LDAP server, which then can use the schema module. Yeah, make sense? Okay, so admin tools. A major missing piece is admin tools. Administering SAMBA 4, one of the ways we've described it is that SAMBA 4 is like a building that's being built. And we have the walls up, we have the roof on, it's reached lock-up stage, so it's a lockable building. Well, there's holes. If you know the right way, you can walk through the side. There's no carpet, there's no light switches. If you want to turn on the lights, you go and buy a bulb and screw it in yourself. It's at that sort of level. But it's good infrastructure. It's good solid flooring, reinforced walls, etc. But it's not a particularly inviting place. You wouldn't want to live there just now. All right? So what we need to do now is put down the carpet, put up the curtains, put up the pictures, do all the bits and pieces that make it a comfortable place to live. And one of the things to do in that is administration tools. And the plan is to create an extensive web interface, much more extensive than the SAMBA 3 SWOT, more along the lines of the little NAS boxes. If any of you have seen, it's like a little wireless gateway, the web interfaces for those, Netgear, Linksys type gateways, tab-based with little pluggable modules for each tab. That's the type of thing we're aiming for in the SAMBA 4 web interface. That's going to be built on top of the libnet interface for common operations, and the command line interface is the net utility. At the moment, the net utility in SAMBA 4 is a very poor shadow of the net utility in SAMBA 3. Net in SAMBA 3 has got quite sophisticated. In SAMBA 4, it's quite simple at this stage. It needs to grow up and become more like the SAMBA 3 one. That's also based on the libnet API. We're also missing some servers. I've mentioned earlier that delay caused by the lack of a CLDAP server. We don't have WinBind. Jerry gave a tutorial yesterday on and this morning about using WinBind, quite a sophisticated subsystem in SAMBA version 3. At the moment, that whole subsystem just doesn't exist in SAMBA 4 at all. That needs to be written. Now, we have built up some infrastructure which will make writing WinBind easier, but it still is a non-trivial task to write that, and that needs to be done. We need to write a spool SS server. Currently, SAMBA, the file and print server, is just SAMBA, the file server. We can't print at all as a client or a server, which is rather primitive. And so, of course, we need to do a spool SS server. We need to support all of the printing, all of the sophisticated printing stuff that SAMBA 3 can do. And that's a big lump of work. The SAMBA 4 infrastructure does make it easier. It's less work than it would be to start printing from scratch in SAMBA 3, but it's still a non-trivial amount of work that needs to be done. We don't have a browse server, so we don't appear in the network neighbourhood at the moment. And again, we have the infrastructure. That's actually a very small task now. It's a very small amount of code on top of our datagram mail slot capabilities, but it needs to be done. And we have a very, very primitive wrap server. We don't really have a wrap server at all at the moment. We do have the beginnings of a wrap client, however. So these will take a lot of work, so please be patient. Another major piece that we want to do is a kernel LSM module. And this is to allow the POSIX Unix side, ordinary Unix processors, to see all these attributes that we've created in the SAMBA 4 world as native POSIX attributes. So, for example, you can set NT-ACLs on files in SAMBA 4, but if you then log in with SSH, your shell and your Emacs session, your VI session, won't obey those ACLs. You can delete files even though you shouldn't be allowed to. To solve that, we need a kernel modification. And that the type of kernel modification that is planned is to write what's called an LSM module for Linux, which is a Linux security module that allows us to intercept operating system calls at a low level and ensure that they obey the constraints of... Nearly done? Obey the constraints of the NT level. So what about a release? The main questions are sort of when, what is vital for an initial release, what can wait for later releases, and who's going to do what? And that's really what this conference, for myself and several other members of the SAMBA team, is about, working out the answers to those questions. The current thinking is that we'd like to have a release out by the end of the year. We'll have alpha releases out well before then, we think. But there is an awful lot of work still to do, as you can see, so you do need to be patient. But of course, Samba 3 has to go on. Our bread and butter is still Samba version 3, and we do have a resource constraint at the moment where we have a lot of Samba team members working on the Samba 4 system, trying to get it to the stage of getting a release as soon as we can. But in the meantime, the long-suffering Samba 3 developers and maintainers have got an increased workload due to the fact that the Samba 4 people are off having fun with the new protocols and the new implementation. So I'd really like to give a huge thank you and a round of applause to the Samba 3 developers to thank them for their ongoing efforts. So the slides are available at that URL down in the bottom right corner there. And I think I'm just about out of time. Any time for questions at all, Volker?
5 minutes or so.
Yeah, any questions at all?
Let me bring you the micro if you have a question.
Alpha back there, yeah. I can just shout. Mixing NFS with the new extended attributes. Right. Yes, NFS v4 is a very interesting thing. Are you talking about NFS v4 or NFS v3? Or both? Sorry? Both. Okay. So NFS v4, it was really quite funny when I first read the NFS v4 specification, because it was all so familiar. NFS v4 is really a repackaging of many of the ideas that have been in SIFS for a long time. And of course, SIFS, in many ways, is a repackaging of some of the ideas that have been in systems like AFS as well. Just different variants on the same theme. But the similarities between NFS v4 and SIFS are quite striking. NFS v4 is much closer to SIFS than it is to NFS v3. So, yes, we would like to interoperate with that. It would be good for the attributes that we save to disk in Samba, the empty ACLs, etc., to be used by NFS servers, in particular by NFS v4 servers that can represent all of those concepts. Whether that will happen, I don't know. At the moment, the NFS work in Linux, my impression of it is it's mostly aimed at NFS v3 type operations wrapped in an NFS 4 wrapper. And it doesn't have a lot of the extra stuff that is in the specification that is optional. Once the basic v4 servers become more widespread, hopefully some more interest will be shown in it, and perhaps that will be extended to support the NT-ACLs and the case insensitivity and the op-locks or reservations, etc., that are needed. And at that stage, I think we should have a good opportunity for sharing the attributes on disk between and in the kernel between the two projects. But really, we have to wait for NFS v4 to get to that first stage before we can go to the second stage. They don't support these attributes at all yet. And so once they do, we'll certainly be suggesting they choose the ones that we've done. Or if we haven't released Samba 4 yet, then perhaps we can cooperate on a different way of doing things. But it's really a bit early to decide on how that's going to happen.
Yeah. Maybe questions? One more question, then we have to go forward.
No more questions? Okay, so thank you very much.